welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m., 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m., and we also stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We encourage you to go there and check out the interviews that we have. I mean, we have 9.5 years worth of programs. You do the math, 52 weeks times 9.5, and there you go. And we also link to our guests' websites, and our guest today has multiple websites. We'll figure out how to do that when we get to that point. I'll have to contact my webmaster. Oh, wait a minute. That's me. And we will have to figure out how we're going to do that. But needless to say, I think today's going to be an interesting program. I've wanted to do a program on this subject for some time. Because it's something that I found out about many years ago when we first moved. And I'd heard the term before, but I'd never really researched it much. And this is just one area we're going to get into today with our guest. So we encourage you to stay with us. My guest today is Tamara Broughton, and she is all the way from, she's up in Canada on the, above the northern border of the United States. And I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
One of the areas that I'm very curious about, of course, is what is often just referred to very succinctly as far as the acronym NLP, or Neuro-Linguistic Programming. We're going to get a definition of that as well. But you also do speaking. You also have provide readings, which we'll also talk about as well. You deal with nutrition. You're basically dealing with the whole person. And you also have a website, which is going by the same name of Tamara Broughton. That's T-A-M-M-R-A. And Broughton.com. We encourage you folks to check out that website, and we'll give out the other two as well as we continue on here on the program. First of all, let's do some defining of terms, as I like to do. Define for us, what is neuro-linguistic programming?
Well, that's a great question, because for the longest time, actually, I couldn't answer that. Because it is such, there are so many modalities and so many techniques that go along with this, with neuro-linguistic programming. So what I've been saying lately to people is really it's how we code our thoughts. And basically how we code our thoughts, how we act in the world based on our beliefs. And it works with the subconscious mind. So really how, you know, we have, you know, over 10,000 conversations with our parents, and you know everything that we're influenced by in our environment, our teachers, and everything around us influences our beliefs. And what neuro-linguistic programming does is it helps us decode the subconscious body language, mostly like where are the eyes going, how is the body, you know, what does the body look like, what messages am I receiving through body language from somebody when I'm with them. So I hope that makes a little bit of sense. There's some technical, you know, terms, explanations out there, but most of the time it really goes over people's heads because neuro-linguistic programming, even when I was studying it, I remember thinking like, what language are we speaking? Because there's so many terms. So really it's how we code our thoughts and then how we react to those thoughts that come up in our mind. And then how we act in the world.
Now, this is something that we're doing constantly from the day we're born until the day we die. But you and others like you, practitioners such as yourself, you are helping people to consciously use NLP to get out of a lot of the things that keep us stuck.
Yes. Absolutely. For me personally, I didn't realize, I didn't know anything about this until around 2006 when I had my own personal nervous breakdown. And I had been around and in holistic health for a long time up until that point, studying holistic nutrition. So I was very much into health and well-being, But I kept finding that with myself and with my clients that I would get to this certain point and I thought, okay, you know what? I'm not trained to go beyond here. This person needs to see a counselor, or this person needs to, you know, just get some kind of other kind of help. And I didn't feel like I was equipped to do that. And through my own breakdown, I kept searching for something that would, you know, bring me relief. And right around then is when the movie The Secret came out by Rhonda Byrne, mm-hmm. talking about law of attraction. And of course, I was, I'm very much, I don't call myself a skeptic anymore, but at that time I really was, because I'm a rebel at my core and I'm always questioning things. And I was always questioning, you know, what was popular, what was coming out that was popular. So I'm always a little bit, I'd like to say a little bit ahead of the curve, because I'm always looking for what is behind what's popular. So that's what I kept doing. I kept asking, and but I was in my own, I felt like I was living my own hell. And I had a friend who's a life coach show up in my new little nutrition practice office in the back of a health food store. And she said, "Do you want to trade services?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely." Because I didn't want to ask for help because I was so stubborn, but I realized I really needed help. And thankfully, she introduced me to a guy named Michael Losier. He lives out here in Vancouver, BC, Canada. And he was, you know, again, and his book is called Law of Attraction. And so I read it and she said, "You got to learn about something called NLP. And I thought, oh my goodness, okay, this definitely is resonating. And so I read his book, and he's very, really in a basic way, talks about neuro-linguistic programming, talks about how to reframe our affirmations to actually anchor them into a feeling, a visual, an auditory. And that's when I started to realize, oh, everybody in the world interprets things differently. I'm very auditory. I'm also a DJ. So I'm very auditory. And there's certain personality traits that go along with someone who's auditory. They talk really loud. They're really good at things like radio. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you, Richard, if anyone's ever been like, "Richard, I'm standing right here." If you're auditory, you talk really loud. And but we don't actually hear ourselves. So, but I'm also very kinesthetic, which is a very feelings person. So I feel things very deeply. I feel like textures. I love textures. But I wasn't very visual. And so, through this process, I started to realize, wow. And I was in another relationship. I was married before, and I realized this person was something called auditory digital, which is a high processing thinker. And again, personality traits that go along with that. And so here I am speaking in sound words like, "Oh, that sounds great," or "that, you know, that doesn't feel good." And I'm speaking to someone who is more using what's called a representational system or a reference system that's all about around processing, thinking, step by step. That, you know, those people really can't complete. They can't move on to something until something's complete, which is not like me at all. I'll skip on to the next thing easily. So it's really, really important, just on a basic level. Neuro-linguistic programming was modeled after Virginia Satir, who's a famous family counselor who was incredibly successful with her, you know, with her relationship, you know, working with families and with people that were having trouble in their marriage. And it's also modeled after Milton Erickson, who is a famous hypnotherapist. And there's even a college out here in Vancouver that where you can go and study NLP called Erickson College. I think it's called Erickson College and or university. I can't remember. So yeah, it was modeled after these two people. It was actually John Grinder and Bandler. I can't remember the first name of the other guy, but Grinder and Bandler. And these guys went out to study them to find what was working really, really well and what wasn't working. So in counseling, some of the things that don't work all the time, sort of typical therapy, is dredging things up from the past. People can be re-triggered because the subconscious mind does not know if something is happening in the moment or not. So like, it doesn't know past, present, and future. It feels like if you're having a memory, a traumatic memory, or talking about a traumatic experience, the subconscious mind actually thinks it's happening again. And so it can deepen a trauma. So I started to realize that, okay, there's these tools that allow us to be in a safe place, which was really, really important for me because I was having severe panic attacks and anxiety. And before that, I was, you know, I considered myself to be, you know, pretty, you know, just a healthy person, you know, mind, body, spirit. And all of a sudden, I just had all these triggers and a lot of trauma from my childhood came up. And I felt like I was facing everything that I had dealt with in my childhood all in one go. And so I'd obviously disassociated from it. So I believe the subconscious mind is actually trying to protect us always. And so when we shake it up and we start doing something a little bit differently, the subconscious mind is like, no, no, no. You know, it's trying to keep us safe. And I have a friend who does something called Psyche, psychology, kinesiology, that uses NLP. And he said this, he says the subconscious mind is like a sumo wrestler. So a lot of times it's so big, you know, it's, in NLP, we say, the conscious mind is like a flashlight in a dark room and the subconscious mind is the rest of the room. And so I always say, where do you want to do the change work? You know, the subconscious mind can take in, you know, millions of bits of information per second. The conscious mind can only take in a little bit at a time, you know, a few bits per second. So when we're able to work the subconscious level, we can make change really fast. Like, you know, I've seen people quit smoking in one session. Whereas, and then other people, they're trying to, you know, they're going through a step-by-step process that's on a conscious level. And so it takes a lot longer and sometimes it never works.
Mm. And that is not because of the work that you're doing. It's because that individual really has some very deep-seated issues within their subconscious that it just, you know, to break through those would just really, I think, probably take more than NLP or what would be the cause of that?
I think it's the layers. Mm, so,
yeah.
It's the same. I also, you know, coach people through through nutritional cleansing. And the same thing happens when we shed things from our body or we shed things from our psyche, you know, other things can show up, you know, things that have been hidden. And so I'm always like, you know, from a nutritional standpoint, I'm always like, yeah, get it out now because it could be something, it could lead to something worse later. And it's the same with the subconscious mind. So no, there, I believe, to be honest, Richard, I believe that neuro-linguistic programming, you know, when I look at all of these tools that are coming out through psychology, I can track it back to NLP. I can always, that's why I went that route. Like with Michael Losier's book, I was like, well, you know, he talks a little bit about NLP. Tony Robbins, his first book, what's it called? Oh goodness. It's his first book. It's called, Unlimited Power. Mm-hmm. The whole book explains NLP. That's what launched him into a super successful career and everything. Even now he doesn't talk about NLP as his tool. Because I'm looking at three binders that I have from all my, you know, I only have the practitioner and the master practitioner level. And something called advanced counseling, and advanced NLP counseling. And I have three binders of tools and I use a couple of them, you know, I use probably about three or four tools that I feel really, are, you know, what I'm really good at. When somebody goes to the master trainer level, and then the trainer's trainer level, wow, like powerful things like that, you know, if I was having a client that, you know, maybe we had lost rapport or they didn't trust me anymore. Or we got to a place where I felt like, yeah, okay, this is beyond my scope of skills. Yes, I would send them to somebody who was a master trainer or a trainer's trainer because that person can keep going to these levels where you're just constantly asking more questions, reading more of the body language and going in that direction. And that's what I love about it, Richard, is that it's not rooted in any, you know, it's not rooted in any type of spirituality, or it really is based on that person and what they're really ready for. Mm. And so, I mean, you've seen it with hypnotherapists. You're like, why do some people in the room get up on stage and do things and don't have any recollection of it? Mm-hmm. And why do other people, they don't? Because some people are more highly suggestible than others. Some people are more willing, more trusting. They would do that on stage anyways. That's part of their, who they are. That's part of their personality. You will never, ever do anything that you actually aren't totally fine with.
Yeah.
Because on a subconscious level, you're always making agreements, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because it brings back to mind many years ago, went to the Arizona State Fair, went to one of these hypnosis shows.
Yeah.
All right. I actually participated, went up on stage. I was fully consciously, absolutely consciously aware of everything that was going on up on stage, even through the hypnotic process, knew exactly what he told me he wanted me to do with the proper cue. I went back and sat down in my seat saying to myself, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. He threw out the cue and I did it. I could not help but do it. And,
yeah.
and the real irony is, yes, he had me cluck like a chicken. Okay.
All right.
But it wasn't anything counter to my own personal mores and beliefs and so forth. But what I found fascinating was the fact that I was 100% consciously aware and awake of everything that was happening up to and including that moment when I started clucking like a chicken.
Yes. Some people remember, some people don't. Everyone has a different level of, you know, I remember as when I was studying, I was reading in one of our books, it was called Frogs to Princes. And as far as I know, like, it's really tough to find that book. It's one of those original sort of NLP books where it actually just really is just a script of all of Grinder and Bandler's workshops, I believe, or trainings. And I mean, there is so much information on NLP out there. It can be quite overwhelming. But yeah, I remember in the book, this guy comes into his office and says, you know, I think I might be gay. I just need to know. I need to know. I need you to create something that tells me whether I am or not. And so what was done is it's called, I can't remember the term of it. There's so many terms. But it basically, he said, well, when this happens and you get into this environment, and then if this happens, it will be assigned to you and you will know 100%. And so, it's very, very, it's very sly. A lot of people, like you and I had a conversation about this before. A lot of people, you know, the feedback that I'm getting now is that, you know, it's a form of manipulation and people are kind of afraid of it. And so really, yes, it's a powerful tool. Want to make sure it's in the hands of people that follow a code of ethics, you know, have great values, you know, have a good moral compass. And so when I get that feedback, I'm like, well, I'm a holistic health practitioner. You know, that's what I've always been. My teacher, Monica Nygaard, you know, her business is, her company is called Quantum Change NLP. You know, she wrote her thesis on alternative therapies, you know, and all holistic based. So that's the approach I take. People are now calling HNLP, so holistic NLP. And I believe that in, you know, my studies with Monica, we called it humanistic. So I believe that, yeah, these are very powerful tools. And in the wrong hands, they could do a lot of damage, absolutely.
Which is rather interesting statement that you make. I remember, and this is not as related, but I managed to participate in or attend a Wayne Dyer concert, if you will, or lecture back in Phoenix in the late 90s. And he had a gentleman with him. His name was Stephen Lewis. And he had written a book, Stephen had written a book called Sanctuary. Now, this has to do with a whole different process called EMC². And the long and the short of it was he takes your photograph, puts it into his computer, and he's able to scan the waves, the frequencies of your body, the vibrations, if you will, and work to rebalance those various frequencies. And it's an ongoing process. Anyway, I remember getting up and talking to him because as he's describing this, I'm seeing in my mind a sound wave. And this is kind of the best way for me to describe it. In a true stereo left-right separation sound wave, if you take one of those channels and you flip it out of phase and then you mix the two together, the similar waveforms are either pushed to the back or deleted. The dissimilar waves are brought forward to the front, i.e. creating what would be, for some that would know this, as a sing-along soundtrack, because the vocal would be pushed into the background. Whereas if you had a left-right mono signal, but you had the two channels and you flipped one and then you merged them together. Because the signals are identical, they would cancel each other out. So I took this information to him and I shared this with him, and he was rather intrigued by my analogy. And when I went to set up an interview with him, I was talking with the woman who basically sets things up, and I shared this with her also. Oh, no, he won't talk about that because he doesn't want that information to get out, because what if it got into the wrong hands? And I'm thinking, you really think I'm the only one who ever thought of this? So that's what has always fascinated me about things of that nature. And you're absolutely right. It can be used in all different kinds of ways. By the way, just to let our listeners know, the book you're talking about, Frogs into Princes, Neurolinguistic Programming, by Richard Bandler and John Grinder, I believe that's how it's pronounced, along with John Stevens. This goes back to 1979.
Yes.
So it goes back quite a ways, this information. Matter of fact, I actually found the text online here. I found it in
wow,
a PDF
amazing.
File. Yeah.
I remember my teacher telling me like it was, you know, this book that we would never find. And
well, it's available on Amazon.
Yeah. They must have reprinted it.
Must have. But anyway, to me, it's just fascinating in terms of our ability to make these kinds of changes in our lives, in our psyches, if you will. Now, I've been through a number of personal growth and development programs over the years. Haven't in the last 20, but from the mid-late 1980s into the 90s, actually, I shouldn't say mid-1980s, early, went through a program called LifeSpring, which was similar to EST. And I still remember the three, I went through the first three levels, didn't get that involved in it. That's what's really interesting is I have never found for any length of time a group or organization or even a philosophy that has grabbed me in such a way that I need to now follow it, adhere to it. And I'm going to use the term used in The Stranger in a Strange Land. I have never found the necessity to grok it. Folks, Google the word grok, okay?
Yeah, that's a good word.
And it's right up there with zeitgeist.
Yes.
and yet there have been periods where I did. For a year and a half, I became a member of the Baha'i Faith. A wonderful group of people, beautiful philosophy, and what was so fascinating to me was when I went to become a member, I wrote a letter to the diocese where I was born, requesting that I be removed from the rolls. To which the woman on the other side of the counter said, "I cannot," and I still, to this day, word for word, "I will put it in your file." Little scary. But when I went to leave the Baha'i Faith, because I could not make the final step, I just in good conscience. I joined the Baha'i Faith because I needed a group to belong to.
Yes, absolutely.
And I know a lot of people, that's why they joined various groups. And that's okay. That's fine. But I couldn't stay because I felt that I had joined under false pretenses.
Mm.
And they said, "No problem. We'll take you off the list. We'll take you off the mailing list for the newsletter, blah, 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 blah. But you're welcome back anytime."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow. Now, how often do you hear that?
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because my teacher for neurolinguistic programming, she's Baha'i. And I'd never even heard of it before then.
I would venture most people are not familiar with a couple of musicians going back to the 70s who sang some songs that actually are so laced with Baha'i philosophy, they don't even know they're taking it in.
Yeah.
And again, Google this, folks. Seals and Croft.
Wow.
Summer Dream, for example. There's one for you. It took me a while to really understand the line in the song, and Jasmine running through my mind. Wonder what that means. But going back to this whole process of reprogramming, because that's really what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to ask you in this context. When I first got into computers, I shared this with my father, and at the time he disagreed with me. I said that the computer is nothing more than a hardware, a physical material version of the makeup of the human brain. And when I say that, not in a physical sense, it's like the human brain, but more on a non-tangible concept, if you will.
Yes.
You have a hard drive, and it stores all the data. Now, we don't know how large our hard drives are. We really don't.
No. And quantum.
And then we have the RAM, the random access memory, which is what I call the desktop. It's where you put all of your papers and you move them around and you do your work and so forth and so on. And you have all your peripherals, your eyes, your ears, your senses, all of your senses, even your sixth sense, which we'll get into as well. And that's how I saw the computer. It's just an extension of the human brain in concept, okay?
Yeah.
And yet, sometimes, you and I both know this, we've gone through this, I'm sure, many times, that the computer, and we're talking about the computer now, not the brain, for some reason, it just won't function. It's slowed down, it's locked up, it's this, it's not doing, it's not working, operating in the proper parameters and so forth. And so, what is the one solution, to that problem? It's reboot. But you can't reboot the human brain. Or, let me put that another way, Tamar, can you reboot the brain?
I believe so. I believe anything is possible.
How would you do, I mean, is that where you would use NLP? Or is there another technique that you utilize? Have you done that in that context?
It's so funny. I was having trouble sleeping last night because I was like, what is he going to ask me? You know?
I was sleeping like a baby last night, taking in some of the smoke from the fires and not thinking at all, because I knew I had no clue what I was going to ask, because the universe asks the questions. I'm just along for a ride. But anyway, back to rebooting.
Yes, I know. And that's what I came back to. And I had this trust of, you know, I am. So to answer your question, first of all, there has to be a desire to want to change. And there, I've met people that, you know, they'll say to me, I want to quit smoking, and I will muscle test them, their muscles, and which really is just a convincer of what the subconscious mind is saying. I get a no, but I don't just end there. It's not that person doesn't want to, or, you know, on a deep level desires to, but I keep testing and I keep asking the questions. And that is there a belief that is holding them back from believing that they can actually quit? And so really all we're doing is we're just going deeper and deeper and deeper into questions and layers and getting agreement or not. Also, like you said, deep-seated beliefs, they are really, really strong, and they are going to do everything they can to keep us, you know, in the state that we're in and the identity that we're presenting to the world. That's why I do believe that working with somebody else is so important, because, and it's the same for me. I will do my own tools on myself, and then I realize when I have to reach out and I have to, you know, either call my teacher or call someone with the same training. And again, I love all modalities. I do oftentimes when somebody's working with me, I will be like, oh yeah, I can actually track that back to NLP. And was there stuff happening before NLP? Absolutely. So, it really is about getting that agreement. But I was working with a client, everything's going great. She knows her initial reason for hiring me was to quit smoking. And I was like, you know, and so we got talking, and I'm taking notes and I'm looking at her body language, because the words, the content in the of the stories is not really relevant. Really, honestly, it's the words that she's using. It's the body language. A lot of people think that NLP is just words. No, it's 7% of the body language is, or whatever, you know, I don't know what the exact number is, or if you could even quantify it. But the rest is body language. And so I'm looking for everything from the color of the skin to where their eyes are going, how their body's positioned, everything. So I'm working with this woman, and we right away I discover that there's something that needs to, you know, we're working with what's showing up right away. In fact, in the first 10 seconds, I know what the session is going to be about. whatever they're talking with me about in the first 10 seconds of our conversation is really probably this is the first layer. So that's why when people say, oh, well, I have something that I want to work on, I'll call you in a couple weeks. I'm like, yeah, great. You know, like so much could happen in 2 weeks that, you know, could trigger something else. And so I'm always like, you know, I just say, yeah, sure, no problem. But I know that when I see somebody, other things are going to come up because it's like a roadblock. It's like, no, nope, you're not getting there. We got to deal with this first. And so the subconscious mind is like throwing out these like, no, there's a wound here. There's a, I always say that people make a decision before a belief happens. There's a decision that was made that we now have to look at from a bazillion different perspectives. And that's what I love about NLP is that we disassociate from a situation. I use something called timeline therapy. That's where you're looking, we elicit someone's timeline. And again, everything from how the timeline is positioned is giving me information. If the timeline is, let's say I say, where's your future? And they point to the front. And I say, where's your past? And they point to the back. I know right now there's something in their past that they're not looking at because it's behind them. But if the timeline is out in front of them, it's right to left. I know this person already understands how to work with consequences. I know that this person probably is already on a path to making better decisions. So kind of got on a little tangent there.
That's all right.
But yeah, but basically this woman, we got so close. And all of a sudden she had a better relationship with her son who she hadn't talked to in 10 years. She had a boyfriend, which she was hoping for. There was all these things that were coming back into alignment as we worked. I'm getting goosebumps because I love this work so much. And in her business, she's like, I just saw her in a magazine. So I'm like, oh my God, you know, proud, right? I'm like, oh, that just makes me feel so good because I'm, you know, the work that I'm sharing is, making an impression. And that's my life purpose, is to be of service in that way. So, but right before I knew, I could feel it coming, she canceled the rest of our appointments.
Mm.
And I was like, that's sabotage, right?
Yeah.
That is the subconscious mind saying, you know, bleep you, get out of here. And, you know, it's so strong. It's such a big wound. It's such a big thing that there were probably a few more layers that we had to get through to get there. But, and I said to her, I said, you know, why would you do that? We're so close. And she said, I feel really great. My life is good. Everything's going the way that I want to. And I said, you hired me to help you with quit smoking. And I feel like we're so close. And, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, this is why, you know, this is what happened and this is what I think, because that's just my perspective. That's just my opinion. It's called a mind read. I'm trying to be a mind reader. And that might not be the truth at all, but it's interesting to me how people will, they're like, this is what I want to do. We get close and then they sabotage it. And we all do it. I do it to myself. You know, I see my husband do it to himself, and, you know, I see people around me doing it. But when we're ready to make that next step, and I believe that it's all perfect, it's all in the time. I don't think there's a big hurry. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because I think the world is under enough stress as it is.
When we
feel ready and we want to take that step, find, you know, I just tell people, like, go find those people that have some NLP training, because I can tell when someone has NLP training or not instantly because of the way they use words. Like, for instance, I'll be in a yoga class, you know, and I'll be in some kind of, you know, crazy position where I'm feeling a little vulnerable and it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, don't panic. Well, the subconscious mind doesn't hear the word don't, right? So I have to reframe it in my mind, and I have to give myself that new learning in that moment for me to stay in that position, to stay strong. And so I'm like, these tools they influence everything. It influences everything.
Mm. Well, I would think that one of the things that I have heard over the years in particular, and especially in my business when writing ad copy, is when, for example, giving out information or giving out the date of an event, you want to stay away from the negative terminology, but I hear it all the time. Don't forget.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Opposed to remember to join us. You know, and for example, I have a program I produce here, and the woman brings in a memory stick, that a flash drive, and I plug it into the computer. This is where she brings the music in every week. And I was saying to her, don't forget your memory stick, which is kind of a weird phrase in and of itself.
Don't forget your memory.
Yeah, exactly. But I've rephrased that. Remember your, and I think I'm going to refer to it from now on as a flash drive. Remember your flash drive.
Yes.
You know, because I want to make sure that she remembers as opposed to forgets. And this is one of the things, especially because you brought it up, when talking about, for example, the law of attraction. And by the way, what I've found interesting over the years in conversing with people about this whole concept, as well as the documentary, The Secret, which I have a copy of, by the way, and I've seen it a couple times. I remember an interview I did with a gentleman, and he said that they left out a part. They
yes,
left
they
out
did.
A part. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, the part that he referenced that they left out was just because you want it. Just because you want to attract that to you, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's in your best interest. Now, I think it was sort of phrased this way, that you can badger the universe incessantly, and eventually the universe is going to go, okay, the universe throws its hands up and says, fine, here. Now you deal with the consequences. Take responsibility
yes.
and deal. And
oh,
it's,
my God.
It's, yeah, and it's like, just because you want it, why do you want it?
Yes.
Why do you want
it? Why is it important?
Yeah.
All of that. Yeah.
Is it in, not only is it in your best interest, but is it part of your life's purpose?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's huge. I mean, The Secret was really a validation for me, but I could see right away that it was a wake up call. This is my theory about The Secret, right? I feel like Rhonda Byrne had to do something quite simple. I think she left a lot of the pieces out, you know, a lot about quantum physics. And, you know, I met Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote Conversations with God. He was in that movie, and I was sitting with him in one of his retreats, and he said, I remember him saying, yes, I asked Rhonda Byrne, why did you cut that out? And she said, oh, well, she feels like people aren't ready for it. So she was really... I think, you know, it was a ground level wake up call at a place where most people live. And that is, I want the house, I want the car, I want the this and that, right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like it was really good in that sense. But I've had people come back to me and just say, you know, rip it apart. And I'm like, listen, it was necessary to reach, especially North America, where we focus so much on that.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay, well, now I have the car, now what? You know, so I think you're so right, though. There are consequences to having more money. There's consequences to having a very public life if you want to be famous. It's all. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a sidebar here in that context. So what is it Linda Byrne? I'm trying to remember the word.
Rhonda Byrne.
Rhonda. What made Rhonda Byrne think that it was her position, her place, and her responsibility to protect us from that information?
Oh, I know. Well, like, that's the ego.
Yeah. And I feel the same way when it comes to institutions that say, oh, we can't tell the public about that because they'll go berserk, or they'll go this, or they'll do that.
Yeah.
It's like,
no.
Well, who are you to make that decision?
Exactly.
For example,
so,
I mean, if they're...
discerning.
Yeah. I mean, if there really are aliens, if there really are extraterrestrials orbiting the Earth and abducting people for experiments and don't you think that the public has a right to know? I mean, there isn't anything we can do about it anyway. So
yeah,
if
exactly.
we know, what difference is that going to make? And that's kind of the position I've taken that, look, if I've been abducted and probed and this and that and the other thing, I hope they bought me a meal and took me to a movie first.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's nothing I can do. Even if I know about it, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, well, and I do believe that, you know, that's a scary thing that we, you know, we're told that we have freedom and, you know, there are things that are influencing us constantly. I mean, I've even heard people say that there's, you know, these little threads that are coming down through, you know, these chemtrails and they're going into our brain and into our skin. And,
yeah.
you know, like it's freaking crazy to like think that. So what I suggest, and this is what I realized through my own panic attacks is that, whoa, I have an amazing imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I could write a pretty scary movie, you know, about all of that. But is that what I want, how I want to live in my life? Do I want to live constantly in fear, or do I want to live a life that's conscious and helpful and loving and also, aware of, say, racism? That's something that's come back into my realm because I, something that's shown up in my life recently is that there's been a lot of naivety. So when I like, and a lot of the around, you know, around white privilege and me not, and love and light and all of this stuff that we're saying, and we're basically, you know, saying, oh, well, just focus on love and light. But it's like, there's real problems and I've been ignoring them. And so of course, you know, broadcasts like such as yours are important because we want to educate people that there's still people getting killed for the color of their skin in our backyard.
Literally,
and so
yeah.
that's something that's just jolted me back to kind of reality lately. But do I spend my days focused on it and go? Because I used to go into, you know, things like Zeitgeist and all those movies and stuff like that. I used to spend a lot of time there looking up a lot of stuff around aliens and things like that. I used to spend a lot of time there. And then I ended up having a nervous, you know, that compounded my nervous breakdown. And I was constantly living in fear. And then, of course, being a holistic nutrition, well, all the food is poison. The planet's poison. We're, you know, it was not a great way to live, right?
Yeah.
I was dying because my body was so acidic and stressed. And so when I realized I have a choice in what goes into my brain, I have a choice. That's what NLP does. It gives people choice. I had a session yesterday using timeline therapy, which is invented by Tad James, and very effective tool. And again, you'll have all the NLPers, like some like hardcore NLPers being like, that's not real. Whatever. It works. I love it. It's great. I don't get into the theory behind things. If I feel like it's in alignment with my values and it works, you know, this was one of my very good friends. She had a big breakthrough yesterday. What I felt like it does is, so I love timeline. We get the timeline out. We find the original event. It's based on that person's belief. So I ask if it was before, was the original event before, during, or after. You know, some people look at me like I'm crazy, right? Before, what are you talking about? So I know that person's going to go probably to like at a young age, or if they say before and they're confused, I say, is it genealogical or is it a past life? Well, lots of people don't believe in past lives. So they'll say, oh, it was passed down through genes, because that's something that they can wrap their head around. And so what I love about timeline is we find the original event, we get, you know, they're way above it. They're looking at it. They're disassociated from it. And I make sure that they don't go in there because some people want to get right in there and I don't let them go down in there. I make sure that they stay above it. We get the learning. I chunk it up to the higher learning, you know, the highest purpose. It's quite amazing to see what happens when people, you know, connect it with, you know, whatever it is that they're in, you know, they believe in, which is connection with the universe or God or universal love. And they have this like realization that this event in their life is connected with their, you know, their purpose. And then I get them to go well before that event ever happened on their timeline, and I get them to keep going until they're way before anything that ever led to that event. And they're able, and then I say, okay, now can you access, let's say it's shame. I'm like, can you access that shame? So shame and guilt we can get rid of completely. Anger, sadness, and fear, we still need those. They're important. But it's when they're out of balance and they're controlling our life that we want to, you know, get them into a healthy, balanced place. Then I say, can you access that, let's say, shame? And they'll go, no, it's gone, because they haven't had an experience of it yet. So what happens is physiologically, I see their body, I see their whole body shift. I see their skin color change. I see that they're happy, they're light. And they realize that it's a choice to feel that. And so I get them to come back on the timeline. And when I get like total clear yes from the subconscious mind that it's safe, we go down into the event. We check on that emotion again. It's not there. Not like it was when we started. They were flushing. They might even, you know, I've had clients breaking out in hives. You know, they're, I get them to give me a number on a scale where they're at. Sometimes it's zero, sometimes it's one, and that's great. Then I get them to come out of that event, and then I get them to take those learnings that we got from the event and go back to each event that ever triggered that emotion and give back that new learning. And so they go back through all of the times, because in the subconscious mind, like I said, millions of bits of information can happen in seconds. So we're going through their whole life and they're giving back that new learning and they're integrating it all the way back to now. Then I get them to come back into the now. I break state. We talk a little bit about what happened. Then I get to break state. I get them to talk about something else for a minute, or I might share a story or something like that. Usually they don't know, you know, they have no idea that I'm breaking state. Then I get them to test it again in the past. And then I get them to test it in the future. And sometimes, especially if we're working with something like smoking, I'll get them to go way out to the you know, way out on their timeline until they can't even imagine, like, to the end of their life, and make sure it's cleared right out to the end of the timeline so it never comes back. It's pretty amazing.
We're talking with Tamara Broughton, and Tamara Broughton is the website.com. Put a .com at the end of her name there. We'll spell it out in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and talk more about NLP, talk about some of the readings, the intuition, all of the different aspects of who and what we really are. Or as one of my guests a few months back said, remembering who we've always been. Here on Tell Me Your Story, we are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I'm here with Tamara Broughton, and we're talking about basically giving you all the kinds of different choices and opportunities that are available to basically everyone, but will you avail yourself of those choices? That is the big thing, isn't it? It's taking the opportunities that have been presented and then moving forward. So we encourage you to check out our website. And again, the website is Tamara Broughton. I'll spell that correctly. Tamara Broughton. And again, that is TAMARABROUGHTON.com. And you can find out about all of the different things that she has to offer. We've been talking primarily right now about, of course, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which, as Tamara has shared with us, basically can assist in areas of allergy relief, health imbalance, pain, anger, fears, sadness, shame, guilt, relationships, families, educational strategies, sports performance, self-esteem. Internal conflicts. Gee, I don't know who has any internal conflicts.
No.
She also uses hypnotherapy. It'll also help with depression, phobias, traumas, success coaching as part of the process, business strategies, teaching, learning difficulties, addictions, cancer, and other diseases. And the list literally could go on and on. What we want to talk about here at this particular juncture, we want to talk about the process of providing people with information that can assist them in beyond NLP. There are those who maybe aren't ready for NLP. They don't quite understand it. And again, in spite of the fact that we're doing it all the time, you know, we're in the process of reprogramming every minute of every day. That's what is. There are those who, and I have at one time or another in my life, have gone to intuitives, as I like to call them, because the other word kind of freaks people out a little bit.
Yeah.
But what I did was I put a different spin on it. And my spin was that I was going to them not to find answers to the questions, but to confirm what I already knew. I needed some outside confirmation, some support and encouragement, as if I'm walking down the road and I've come to a four-way stop and I know that I should go ahead and make the right turn, but I'm not 100% certain. So I'm going to ask somebody who's coming along, say, should I go this way? I mean, I feel like I should, but for whatever reason, maybe it's because of some of the fears and anxieties and or shame and or whatever the other issues that are going on and triggers. And they'll say, yeah, I'm getting that right now, because that's the other aspect of this. Everything's in motion, in flux. And what someone will tell you as an intuitive today may not be tomorrow, may be the wrong answer tomorrow. But one of the things that I have found, Tamara, is that my intuition has been really interesting over the years. I use the example of bicycling to and from work, as I used to do back in Phoenix. And I was traveling along the road one day, and I had this prompting to, you're going to come up to this four-way intersection, and I want you to turn right, go up a block. And we're talking about Farmfield blocks, okay? And then go ahead and make the left to continue on west, and then make another left and go back down to the road you were on, and then continue on. And of course, I'm thinking, yeah, okay, sure, that makes a lot of sense, taking me basically 2 miles out of my way. So I go half mile down the road beyond the four-way intersection, and the promptings got stronger and stronger to the point where I literally turned the bicycle around, went back to the four-way intersection, and in this time, of course, I made a left because of the positioning. And I went up to the corner and I made the left and so on and so forth. And then, in other words, I followed the promptings after having added an additional mile to the journey. I don't know what I avoided. I don't know what all of that meant, or maybe, and I don't know that our higher selves necessarily do this or the universe necessarily does this, but maybe it was just a test to see if I would trust. I don't know. I haven't really thought a great deal about it to in terms of that depth. But what I do know is that I certainly I felt released from the prompting. It went away once I followed through and came to the other intersection and then continued on my journey on that path. But that's the big thing. And in one of those programs that I went through back in the 80s, they had us write down a statement, and mine was, and I still have the big old piece of construction paper, that I will listen to, and I did this in longhand, but then the second line I did in bold, all caps. Now, this was before the internet and before, if you do everything in all caps, you're yelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I will follow the promptings of my higher self.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I joke,
you made a declaration right there.
Basically, and I basically say this to folks. I said, look, if you're going to listen and not follow, then what's the point of listening? Stop listening. Okay. Just ignore it. If you're, but again, it's everybody's choice. You have to make your own decision. But let's talk about the work that you do on that level for people. Where does that come into play beyond NLP?
Yeah. So it, you know, took me a long time to add that to my website. It was very recent, and I'm working with someone right now to take basically my entire, this is how sensitive I am to words, to gather all of the studies that I've done in the last 20 years and put them all together and create a methodology. So it was a big step for me to write, to talk about being an intuitive and how I wanted to combine that with my work, because I thought people, you know, again, I was afraid of what people would say. They would think they would discredit all of my training. I thought, okay, they're going to think I'm flaky. Well, of course, if I think that, then that's how I'm going to get treated. So I took a bold step. And what I often say is, when I'm doing readings is, you know, my ego will get in there and I'll start questioning, you know, am I just so great at reading body language that they're giving me all this information and that's really not coming through me? And I'm like, who cares? It doesn't matter. Whatever is coming up is real. And I had a very close person in my life that was a shaman tell me that. And she said, everything is real. Everything is real. And I still hear her every time I have, I imagine something, I'm like, that's real. That's real. And so in my work as an intuitive, it came to me at a very young age. My dad's a mortician and he did a lot of coroner work. So, you know, he's a funeral director. He was at the scene of accidents. And so I believe that when, you know, people are in an accident, their spirits can just pop out of them. And sometimes I believe that they can cling to people. And I believe he brought them home. And so I believe I had some spiritual buddies, you know, for a good portion of my life. And to the point, again, this is, again, when I talk about the breakdown that I had in 2006, that was another thing that I was hearing a lot of voices. I was feeling like there was a lot of energy around me and not always very pleasant energy. And so working with, in the last few years, working with shamans that can help, you know, move. And again, it depends on whatever your belief is. A lot of people think I used to think shamanism was really cuckoo. I was never raised on any religion or faith. So I got to experiment with all of these different faiths and religions. And, I really was drawn to the shamanism, and partly because I'm Métis. So I do have, you know, some Cree Indian in me. And but mostly English and German, I found out fairly recently. So the intuitive part is I trust. It's like you said, it's a trusting, it's a knowing, it's I connect with I call in that person's higher self, but I actually ask permission first before I do anything. Even when I'm doing NLP, I always ask permission constantly in my conversations, always asking for permission, because I believe that is the most respectful way to do anything. I've had people learn that they were, you know, like you said, psychic or intuitive, and then just blurt stuff out. And it can be it can change someone's life in a moment. It can freak them out. It can take them on a very scary path. And so when you discover that you're like this, I say, again, you know, learn some of the ethics around that, sharing that as well. Like, get permission, ask yourself if it's important for this person to know in this moment, whatever you're seeing. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's not that person's not ready for that information. And so in a roundabout way, I will offer some language or some questions that will eventually allow them to come to that knowing on their own. But yeah, I believe everything is energy. I totally believe that there's spirit around us all the time. Again, I use muscle testing as a convincer for my own subconscious mind and for others. I can show them with their own body what's happening and what's not happening, a yes and a no, and then keep asking. I also work with the quantum self, everyone says we're all one. That's it. It's the quantum field. We're all connected in the quantum field. Mm-hmm. And so I ask there. So I always get, I ask, you know, spirit, the quantum field, the higher self, angels. If, you know, again, if a person doesn't believe in angels, I don't talk about angels. I'm only designing strategies and using tools and mirroring back the language that's coming from them and then asking questions. So that's why I was a little worried about putting that on my website, because I thought, you know, what if somebody doesn't, you know, that needs what I have to support them in their transition or in their healing or whatever, that, and then sees that and doesn't come. Well, I've come to realize that I want to attract and work with a certain kind of person. So that's okay now. I do want to work with people that are willing and open to look at this. You know, I believe that's part of our evolution, is that we're waking up to realizing we're all intuitive. We're mm-hmm. all empathetic. We're all, we can all see these things. And I believe that there's been such a shift lately that things are happening immediately. I will think of somebody and the next thing I know, they're calling me. Or I will say something at the same time that, like, if we're watching a Netflix movie, or I will literally say something at the exact same time as what's coming on the screen. Or, you know, it's happening more and more. So I actually say I'm open to that. Something that someone said to me recently was amazing, though. And they said sometimes in the spirit world, they don't realize how that we're still, like, as human beings, we are big spirits in these small casings. So sometimes the energy that is given to us can be so big and overwhelming that it can literally, like, you know, shock our body. And so I now say, if you're going to give me a lesson or a learning or a miracle, you know, make it so that I can handle it.
Yeah.
Make it so that I can actually work with it in this field, in this realm that I'm in, that I'm living in as a human being. Because now that I know what's possible and the potential and the bigness of spirit and the incomplete magic that we all have, you ask for something big and sometimes it comes and it can, like, I feel like you said, like, it's a computer, you'll just short out.
Yeah.
And you'll burn out.
That's as a matter of fact, it's interesting the way you phrase that, because in a lot of the Eastern philosophies, going back hundreds, thousands of years, that's what they talk about, that, you know, if you have not properly prepared yourself for this particular initiation, for this particular
yes.
position, if you will, yeah, you will literally burn up the human body. It just can't handle that level, and or the brain, the mind, what have you. And that
yeah.
can happen. This is very interesting. And I think that as we move forward, I want to talk a little bit also before we run out of time about if I'm correct, the conscious goddess.
Yes. Well, that's my baby girl.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
Oh my goodness. Well, obviously you can probably sense that it brings me tremendous joy.
Yeah.
So I don't have children. I don't have siblings. I have friends that have children. That's the closest that I, have in my life to having family. And I'm also, we haven't talked about this, but I'm also a professional in network marketing and have been for 10 years now, professionally since, again, since this 2006, experience in my life where I said, show me what it is I'm supposed to do. And the, one of the tools that came to me was residual income through network marketing and the community and the training and everything that came with that. And I feel aligned with a great company. What happened though is that I tried to push myself in one direction to and thought, okay, if I just get to this next level of income, then I can really live my dreams. And it was a weird thing that, and again, I'm open to learning and I'm open to listening to people, but again, I started to realize that it was this discernment that I, some of the mentoring and coaching I was getting was not in alignment with, again, my code of ethics. And I was raised by my dad mostly. I have a great relationship with my mom and my stepmom. We all love each other, but I was mostly raised by my dad. And so, my mom tells a funny story about how when I was born, they said, Mr. Broughton, you're a proud, a proud father of a baby girl. And his first response was, are you sure it's not a boy? So, my dad raised me very masculine. And so I did a lot of things that women don't do. And I'm getting around to your answer here in just a second. But the backstory is that I've lived a very masculine life. So everything that I've done in my life, I've gone against the status quo and what, again, what a woman was supposed to do, which thankfully, is shifting on our planet now with the, the rising of the divine and sacred feminine. And I stood for that. I stood for, being a woman that could do what men do. So I was a backcountry snowboarder. I was a skateboarder. I'm a DJ. Again, still not very many women DJing professionally, especially at like the kind of DJing that I do. I got into network marketing, which is full of women, 80%, because it's a modality. It's not a modality. It's a profession that women can actually, that you can't really put a limit on what you can make in that. And so obviously that's great. And it's networking, which women are naturally good at. And then, so I did all these things that were like, rebellious, but also very, I did them very masculine. I always had short hair. I had a shaved head. I remember hitchhiking from the small town that I lived in out to the big city of Vancouver and going to punk rock shows. And everyone thought I was like a 14-year-old boy. And then I started to realize that I had mostly men friends. And it was just, I was like, wait a second. I am like a boy. I started to question my sexuality. And then I wasn't gay or any of that. And I asked a lot of those questions, but what I realized is that I hadn't embraced my feminine. I hadn't been taught anything about femininity. I hadn't been given this opportunity. And when I started to realize that I wasn't growing in my business because I was trying to go at it and force it, I wasn't doing it because I love it and it brings me joy. Even though I love what I do, I love coaching people through cleansing and seeing their results. I love it. There was something else that needed to happen. And being a DJ and being an event planner, I put that on the back burner because, again, it was one of those things that burnt me out. I ran a production company for 10 years. I promoted bands and DJs, and it was had a lot to do with drinking and drugs. And so I was like, I just abandoned it. But then I felt a part of my soul died. So what ended up happening is I went into a workshop about speaking and how you could, make money through speaking and doing these events, which opened me up in some ways to possibility. But in other ways, there was just some way that things were structured and triggering people and their pain points was not for me. But it allowed me to kind of go back to what it is that I love. And then I was like, I want to do a festival. And ever since I started DJing, I knew that, like, I was living in the Rocky Mountains up here in Canada, and I kept seeing myself out on the coast doing this festival for women. But when I made that decision about not wanting to be aligned with events that promote drugs and alcohol anymore, because I gave that all up in 2011, it just, it again, it was one of those things that short-circuited my body and threw me into panic attacks. And with the NLP, I now can see my outcome. So all I have to do is go to my outcome and realize that, you know, having whatever drink or smoking whatever isn't going to, it's not getting me where I want to go. So it's actually quite a logical decision. And so I kept having these visions that I was going to be out on the West Coast of Canada, out, you know, in Vancouver or near Vancouver, doing these events. And I wrote it off. But then all of a sudden it was like this birthing. And I was like, am I going to do this, event called Conscious Co-Creators? And really, I just kept getting that it was with women, with women, with women. And most of my clients and customers are women in everything else that I do, interestingly enough. And so I was already developing this network with women and connecting with women. And boom, all of a sudden, December of 2014, all of a sudden I heard it so loudly because I'm auditory, the Conscious Goddess. And I looked at my now husband and I started crying. And it was like, honestly, I just said, this is coming so strong that I feel like I am in service to it. Just like when someone gets pregnant, it's like, okay, well, there's no turning back now. And, you know, or you can abort, which I thought about, you know, many times. And immediately I registered the name. I knew that I was going to do the Conscious Goddess Festival. I was talking to this woman. She all of a sudden wanted to do it with me. And then in 2015, we birthed the Conscious Goddess Festival. And the company, which I'm still obviously need to do branding on, and I realize how important that is the Conscious Goddess. So it's a co-creative, conscious events and production company working with, you know, mostly women, but anyone that wants to create more conscious events. And like I said, I haven't really honed in on what the brand is or what the mission and the vision is. All I know is that we've done two of these festivals. And what it did for me, it was like, I love the festival. I love the festival world. It allows for, you know, people to vend and do their crafts and do their business. It's a whole culture that's a phenomenon that's growing quickly around the world. It brings people together that, you know, think that they're freaks and they have a home. Mm-hmm. And it also is a place to exchange ideas. And I simply just did not want to run an event that was just, you know, come and get, you know, totally annihilated and escape your life. I was like, no, I want to come create an event, co-create an event that is about celebrating our life and our changes and our transformation and connecting. I chose the festival platform because I DJed at festivals for, 10 years. That is, it's sort of like a blueprint and a template that I'm familiar with. And I see it as like going to a buffet. You walk in and you can pick and choose what you want to do. Our focus is on workshops. So, and again, I left it open to whoever wanted to apply. So obviously I had mostly women apply, but a couple of men came and performed and it's totally open for, you know, again, conscious, heart-centered men to come and speak. And, you know, as we get a little bit more clear about where we're going, obviously I want it to be aligned with this, creating this space and safety for women to be in their element and just completely express what it is that they're not just totally and 100% can feel open to dressing how they want to, singing. And, you know, we had a lot of ceremony. We did a traditional, native ceremonies. We did, which were very powerful. We did all kinds of workshops. We had a womb rite workshop, and our fire keeper, who is a man, went and sat in there, and it was so powerful. And my mom was in that one too. And it just warms my heart that they're coming together in nature. And I live in one of the most, you know, beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful everywhere, but we live in a rainforest, so it's mountains and the river and lush forest. And we're in, you know, we're right in the heart of Mother Nature. And so it just brings me so much joy. Not just, see, that's a word that apparently women use a lot, that it's a beautiful experience. It's my baby. I feel like sometimes I know what I'm doing and then oftentimes don't know what I'm doing. I'm open to the process. I've learned so much. My beloved husband and I have invested a lot of our time and our money, and we're very proud of that.
Mm. He's involved, obviously.
This is the most amazing thing. So the woman that was working with me in the first year decided that, you know, she wanted to carry on with her own projects. And so a month and a half before, I felt like I was on my own. So a big lesson I learned that I need a way bigger team. But what was so amazing is that about a month and a half before last year when we did the event, and then this year, Tony started. He's one of those, like, he has a brain, like, he's one of those kinds of people that can, like, figure out a Rubik's Cube. Like, I guess he used to, like, go into competitions for Rubik's Cube. So he's really good with, like, lines and math, and that his brain works really well that way. Mm-hmm. And I met him 20 years ago, actually, and we had a crush on each other. So it's kind of a cool story that we're together. He used to make these tie-dye mandalas, and we used to have them all in our units. And I lived in a ski town called Lake Louise, and we always used to have them. And then through my own radio show that I did a few years ago, I had someone coming on and talking about sacred geometry. I shared it with him, and he just went into this big study. Anyways, the point being is that about a month before the Conscious Goddess Festival, he lights up and he starts doing tie-dyes. And so last year he did all of these goddesses, these butterflies on these huge king-sized sheets that we found in a thrift store nearby. And then this year he added an element and he started doing sacred geometry in them. So he would do these like beautiful turtles, and then in this belly he would do these sacred geometry. So there's that. And then at the event itself, he is just there to serve, and he's running, you know, he's going around on his little, you know, electric motorbike, and he worked so hard. And in him, in the way that he was there for me, it gave so many people hope. And now we are simply running the festival together. And we realized that this isn't just for women. This is, we had, you know, a 2-week-old baby to, you know, an elder, and everyone in between attend these events. So it's so amazing. We're very excited.
It sounds very exciting, and it's wonderful to have a team put together like that between you and your husband, and of course other folks as well. So it's rare that happens. I have quite the similar situation in that my wife, she supports me in the things that I'm doing. Even though she's not always here, that's fine. She certainly understands how important what we're doing here is. And we're both of like mind in terms of wanting to, if you will, change the world. And we're doing that one day at a time and so forth. You know, we're just about out of time. I would like to, first of all, thank you so much for taking so much time and sharing your story and your information about what you're doing and the work in NLP and, of course, the Conscious Goddess, as well as your intuitive work. I also want to invite you, should you and your husband find your way down here to Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, my goodness. You know, right as soon as we started this interview, I had a vision of us being there.
Well, we'll hold you to that.
we love it there.
We'd love to have you come down here. And like I said, we'll continue this conversation and let our listeners hear it as well. And before we let you go, again, I want to remind our listeners that the websites that you can check out are TamaraBroughton.com. That's TamaraBroughton.com. TamaraBroughton.com. There is also another website called TheConsciousGoddess.com and LivingProofNutrition.ca. So we encourage you to check out those websites, and we'll be linked to those as well. Before we let you go, I have three final questions for you. First of all, who is Tamara Broughton?
The first word that I heard was a star. That's the word that came to me. So I believe we're all stars. We're all, you know, little stars in our own world, in our own atmosphere, in our own universe. And we are of the universe. I am of the universe. And universe to me is universe, which I believe stands for one song.
Ah, I like that. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Simply, you know, if I can support anyone in making the transition into finding their life purpose and why they're here, that's the ultimate purpose for this, is, you know, being that bridge for people to walk across and realize that we all have beautiful gifts, that our behavior is not who we are. Our behavior can be changed. And when we make that decision at the deepest of levels, that, you know, I'm here to simply, you know, hold their hand, walk across that bridge with them, and show them what's absolutely possible for their lives.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
It's that. It's, I'm here to, in a relatable way, simply show people what's possible. And simply be a guide and a friend and share hope for the world where, you know, there's so much, seems to be so much, everything just seems to be rooted from fear. And I simply, my life is, I'm here to show people that it comes from love and that, you know, I can just love the crap out of you.
Well, Tamara, thank you so much for joining us here on the program, and we will stay in touch with you, and again, hopefully have an opportunity to do an interview in studio with you when you've come down to Santa Barbara.
Oh, I would love that. I would absolutely love that. Thank you so much for this opportunity, Richard.
You're very welcome.
Super awesome pleasure.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.